You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am one of your co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, and I'm a stat writer at IndyCornrows.com, where you can read all my articles every Wednesday, posting on that site, IndyCornrows.com. Last week, I wrote about the post-All-Star break, everything you need to know for the last 25 games, and coming out this Wednesday, that is going to be tomorrow. If you're listening to this show on the designated day of Tuesday when it posts, it will be about Domantas Sabonis. On today's show, I'm going to hit two topics. I'm going to hit the first one, obviously, is the Pacers' 109-103, just disappointing loss to the Dallas Mavericks. Then I'm going to go in-depth on my Sabonis article. I'm going to give you all the inside looks on how I got to my conclusions, the comparisons I made, the research I did, all that stuff, a just complete, you know, insider look on how I got to where I got to in the article, which we'll post, of course, like I said again, over and over on Wednesday. But now, let's just get to today's Locked On Pacers podcast. The Pacers lose a disappointing game to the Dallas Mavericks, 109-103. Dallas moves on to be 19-42. Yes, they've won 19 games this whole season, and two of them are against the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers move to 34-26. They are now 9.5 games back of the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference, Toronto Raptors. They are 1.5 back of the Cleveland Cavaliers, 0.5 up on the 6-seeded Bucks, and a game, full game back of the 4-seeded Washington Wizards. Pacers, like I said, lose this one 109-103. Victor Oladipo was the story of the game with constant foul trouble. He played a grand total of 23 minutes. I would venture to guess that's one of his lowest minute totals of the season where he was not hurt in a game or where the team was not blowing them out. He did manage to get off 13 shots, though, and finish the game with 21 points. The best player for the Pacers all night was Miles Turner, who shot 10 of 14, 2 of 4 from 3, and put up 24 points. He looked like he could get anything he wanted at almost any moment. The first half, the bank was open nonstop for him, hitting multiple shots off that left foot, banking them in on the right side of the court. The next best Pacer was probably Bojan Bogdanović, who finished the night with 19 points on 8 of 16 shooting. Overall, Dallas was just on their game all night. J.J. Barea killed them off the bench, 7-11, 19 points. Harrison Barnes had a pretty nice night, 21. And then McDermott off the bench, 4-for-4 from 3, really closing it out late. Both Barea, McDermott, and then Dirk Nowitzki were at plus 19, plus 20, and plus 20 on the court. They were extremely effective. Dirk really didn't have a great of a night, but his plus minuses were off the charts. Struggling with the Pacers was Sabonis, only had 5 points. He was a minus 20. That's probably where Dirk's come from. And Lance Stephenson, who was a minus 20 as well. Lance is really starting to worry me right now. On the road, he continues to struggle. We all know Stephenson at home is a different animal. He gets that crowd going, gets pumped up. He starts, whatever it is, coursing through his veins, whatever it is that home crowd can bring to him. He doesn't seem to have it on the road. He really just doesn't seem to have it on the road, and it's worrisome because he's putting up about 11 points per game at home and just 7 on the road. Yeah, so I don't know what it is about Stephenson, about that home crowd. I think I can take a couple guesses, but on the road, he really seemed to struggle, and he really seemed to hurt Indiana today. He was lazy on defense, missing McDermott a couple times late in the game where he just got lost. I mean, Bray had that really nice behind-the-back pass basically over his head, but he kept getting lost. And then on the offensive end, he made a couple of just rash decisions to shoot the ball, and that cost them, at least at the end of the half, when he took the shot way too early at the end of the third, sorry, not the half, the third quarter, to make it. It was 65 all. He took a three with, Pacers had the ball with under 24 seconds on the shot clock, so they could have ran it the entire time. He took a shot probably 10 seconds left. That allowed McDermott to come down and drain a three to go up to 68-65 heading the fourth, and that really kind of threw the momentum Dallas's way. Dallas rode that momentum basically through the entire fourth quarter almost, and then, of course, Pacers made a last-minute run, got it cut to 2 points before Vic stepped out of bounds almost on a steal play that almost saved them the game but didn't quite do it. A couple other notes from the game. Like I said, I really like the way Miles Turner played. He is finally hitting a stride, it looks like. I was surprised they didn't go to him more late. They really, you know, continue to rely on that Victor Oladipo isolation to get to the rim play, which worked pretty effectively. Vic either got to the rim or got fouled almost on every time. But it seems like on the pick and roll, they can run some kind of play with Turner picking and popping or something like that to get Turner, you know, an easy look at the three. Especially when they needed threes late, they seem to not take them. They almost seem to, like, let's just keep getting twos and hope they miss free throws, which is a game you play, but it's not always the best one, in which it almost worked. Like I said, Vic was half an inch foot out of bounds from stealing that ball, having the ball, probably going to the rim, tying the game up at 103 and winning that game for them. So there's that, you know. These things all come down to one play sometimes, but I really would like to see Turner get more action in the fourth quarter, more shots set up for him, because he was playing incredible. He seemed like he couldn't miss for a while. He was hitting his threes. Really, the only thing I can remember this season is basically that Heat game earlier this year where he hit three or four threes, in the Hornets game where he kept hitting his three-point shot. So I would like to see that, but it was a glimpse of the kind of the future of where someday Turner can kind of be more sort of an offense, taking off a dominant role, and him and Vic will be lethal on that pick and roll, because both guys are a threat to shoot the three, guys are a threat to go to the rim, and then both guys are a threat to make the pass. I mean, that's almost unstoppable. You see that run with Horford and Kyrie a little bit. You see it obviously with Durant and Curry. I don't think that would be that good, but some kind of smaller version of that is really awesome. If they could figure out how to get that to work, it would be one of the most lethal offensive plays, especially late in the game. And I would not be surprised if we see that more in the playoffs. Pitcher obviously without Darren Collison, that was it's been a big injury. They've been managing kind of to, I would say, survive without him. Joseph is a reasonable replacement, but Collison, the way he's been playing, Collison was playing at a top 10 point guard level, and Joseph just isn't on his level this season. But Joseph was 4 of 8 for 10 points. He had to play way too many minutes because of Vic's foul trouble. You get to see a lot of Joe Young, who played 15 minutes, but the Pacers really didn't dig that deep in the bench. They played their starters a ton. I mean, everybody but Vic played 36 or more minutes. Robinson looked a little better, finally looked back in stride somewhat. He was 4 of 6. He still hasn't hit a 3 in this game, so he only had 10 points, but he looks better, and he's getting there, and I'm not too worried about him yet. You know, we'll worry about when we see a bigger sample size, let's say, at the end of March after they play. God knows how many days in March, every other day from, I think it's from actually starting on Monday, they play every other day till the end of March. So that's when I get worried about Robinson. But for now, that's all I got on today's Pacers 109-103 loss. Take a quick break, and I'm going to talk about Sabonis. So I have an article coming out on Wednesday on IndyCornrows.com. I know I've said it 100 times. I really need to stop, but I keep saying it. It's about Domantas Sabonis and comparing him to Al Horford after the All-Star weekend. If you're listening to this pod, you've noticed I made that comparison 2 weeks ago on our salary cap show, something like that, as kind of talking about the future of the Pacers. But I really did kind of an in-depth look to kind of compare Horford to Sabonis and then that 2014-15 Hawks team that won 60 games to the Pacers, where they are now, where they could be. And there's some eerie similarities between the two teams and the two players. So when you look at Sabonis and you look at Horford, you get two of the same type of style centers. Two centers who really aren't worried about scoring 20, 25 points, aren't expected to score 25 points a game, but expected to get, you know, 14 points and 7 or maybe let's say 10 rebounds to be generous, and really do all the little things right in setting picks, setting screens, footwork, and things like that. If you watch Horford, he has some of the best footwork in the NBA. You saw on display in the All-Star game where he seemed like the only player that really like was moving in the right spots at times. In the All-Star game, you kind of don't see great footwork because guys are just kind of jacking up shots. But if you watch some of Horford's highlights too, you could see when he sets picks for Kyrie Irving, he does a great job of either moving the defender enough to give Kyrie an extra step or sliding around, things like that. I examined a play that Horford and Irving ran against the Golden State Warriors where Horford basically pushed Durant just slightly on a screen. Durant recovered, but by then Kyrie's passed him. That allowed Horford to kind of pop out with really nice forward to separate himself and get a nice open shot. It's something you would really actually see from Sabonis and Oladipo on some sense. And I wonder if Pacers have examined the film of Horford and Irving and kind of tried to replicate that with Oladipo and Sabonis, where, you know, the handoff play or a pick and roll kind of play, where a lot of times, you know, I'm always kind of dumbfounded how Sabonis gets open or how Vic makes the pass. Sabonis ends up at the rim a lot of times. You know, Sabonis is definitely faster and more athletic at this stage in his career than Horford is at this stage in his career. Horford is also, you know, almost 30, while Sabonis is 21 years old. But you can see it sometimes when Sabonis sets screens and he usually uses kind of his body and his, you know, quick feet to kind of slip the defender, get a quick pass from Vic, and then bolt to the rim. He does a really good job of doing that. But then if you watch, you know, Horford, the one thing he can do that Sabonis can't is Horford can get the ball at any moment and make a play on the rim. Horford's got really good handles for a center. I mean, I think Horford really is a more power forward, but in the new NBA, he plays center, kind of the way Sabonis will probably play some hybrid of power forward center based around Turner. But if you watch Horford, he does a really good job of, he can just get the ball off the dribble and in the right matchup, go to the rim or use kind of his threat of going to the rim to back off and shoot a nice jumper. You know, Sabonis relies a lot on the guards or the forwards, you know, with the ball setting him up. You know, Sabonis on 72% of his shots made have come from an assist. Well, Horford's at 58%. It's a huge difference. I mean, that's, Horford shoots about 10 shots a game. That's a whole, let's say, you know, two less shots per game for Horford, where he's able to score by himself, which Sabonis can probably develop over time. But really, Sabonis really needs to keep developing his footwork to reach Horford's level. He, I think, is kind of heading in that way as the kind of guy who can do all the little things right. So then my next thing I did in the article was I sort of took that to the next level and looked at Horford's best season. You know, could say it's this season. The jury's still out on that. But Horford's best season, the team that had the best record while he was on the roster, was one of the leaders, was the 2014-15 Hawks. Pacer fans will remember that team was the same team that played them in the 2013-14 first round of the NBA playoffs, where they took them to 7 games. Horford didn't play in that first round series, but I think that series where they took the Pacers to 7 games boosted everybody on that roster's confidence and sort of propelled them into the next season with the Horford return and all that stuff, sort of helped them. But you look at that team, you get sort of this three-headed monster in the front court on that Hawks team of Damari Carroll, Paul Millsap, and Horford. Millsap and Horford are just superb offensive players, and then Carroll's a really good defender. You can sort of build the same type of thing with Robinson, Turner, and Sabonis, I think. I think, you know, it's a little different because you have to play Turner more at the four in that scenario where they're similar. But I think at the end of the day, Turner and Sabonis will be seamlessly playing next to each other, and they'll switch between the four and the five, whatever, if it's each other comfortably on the defensive end of the floor. But you could see the Pacers building something like that, but then with a better guard. You know, the best guard on the Hawks was Jeff Teague. I think Depot's a better player than Teague was at his peak. I think Depot's peak is better than Teague's peak, but you could see them building that kind of offense where it's Depot could, I think, become a semi-point guard, whatever it is, you know, a really good guard to set up everybody who can make really good passes, and then you have such a offense-dominant front court with at the power forward and center position that can just scare teams and force them into all kinds of things and really kind of create this whole spaced out offense. And then you're kind of thinking, all right, who's the shooting guard? I mean, so let's say Vic plays point guard, you're looking at, like, you know, Bojan could play the role of Kyle Korver. I mean, you're talking, you can find a guy. You kind of find a guy to be your shooting guard, and you sort of just space the floor out really well, but then you have really three offensive threats in the Pacers versus, you know, I think on that old Hawks team, it was Teague was an offensive threat, but I still think Millsap and Horford were the more dominant offensive threats. You know, Sabonis would probably take the third scorer role, which would be like 10 shots a game, but then you're looking at like 18 shots a game maybe for Vic and 16 for Turner and 10 for Sabonis, and you could really get, you know, because of Sabonis' efficiency, he could get to 15 points a game. You know, he's a really good down-low scorer. Like, I think he's in the 70% still on his inside 3 feet shot, so that's kind of where I see that Pacers going, and I think that also has to do with building chemistry. So I don't know if this is going to be this year and that's next year's team, but maybe it's the team in 2020, because I think Sabonis will start next season, obviously depending on what Thad does, but I think Sabonis needs to start next season, and that's kind of the step. You build this kind of chemistry with, you know, Glenn, Vic, Turner, Sabonis, and use it to build for the future. Because at the end of the day, what would make Pacer fans and make me happy is that the Pacers won 60 games. You know, that's, you don't have to win a title. I like to win a title, but if they didn't win a title, 60 games is like nothing to be ashamed of. It makes for a really exciting season. It's an accomplishment that Pacers have only done it once in franchise history, that 03-04 team that won 61 games. I mean, it's hard to win 60 games in the NBA. You have to be really, really good, and that would kind of be an accomplishment, especially if they could do that in 2 or 3 seasons, because I don't think they'll have the same drop-off that the Hawks have, barring, of course, injury and stuff like that, but the Hawks had a huge drop-off because of injuries, and then the Teague and Schroeder thing, and so many other things that I don't think will hurt the Pacers, because they've got maybe a little bit better front office, whatever it is. You know, they won't have the issues with Danny Ferry and Budenholzer, though they kind of have an established front office that can probably help make the right moves. But make sure to check out that Sabonis article. It's going to be Indy Cornrows on Wednesday morning. That's all I got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at LO Pacers. Follow me at FriedmanAdam5. Follow my co-host. We'll be back with you guys on Wednesday to preview the Hawks game at T East NBA. We'll probably do a mailbag sometime soon, hopefully. We got a lot of games, back-to-back games, I think, with the Pacers, like I said, from Monday through all the end of March. But we'll try to fit in some questions from you guys out there. As always, you can tweet at us. We'll respond. We respond to most people who tweeted us. We enjoy interacting with our fans and just talking Pacers with anybody out there. That's all I got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be right back.